Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
I hate the things that walk on two legs but want to walk on four. I hate the things that run in the jungle and slurp from water. We must not like these things. I'm playing the Sayer of the IMDb.
That's basically this podcast, the Sayer of the IMDb. Yeah.
So we watched The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Animals came from miles around. So tired of walking so close to the ground. They needed a change, that's what they said. Life is better walking on two legs. But they were in for a big surprise. Because they didn't know the law.
It's the law.
No spilled blood. What is the law?
No spilled blood.
Boy, so let me just start off strong here. I kind of love this movie like a lot, but only like 20 minutes of it. There's like 20-25 minutes that might be my favorite movie, and it's sandwiched with, oh man, I'm bored.
Yeah. I looked at, in looking at this movie, I ended up stumbling on this Siskel and Ebert review of it on their show, and Siskel really liked it. Siskel was like, thumbs up. Part of his reasoning, and I will absolutely agree with this, is the acting is wild in this.
Yes.
I like Marlon Brando's bizarreness. For as much as it was detrimental to the creation of the movie and drove everyone nuts, it's just fascinating to watch.
It's
what the fuck is that? Why does he have an ice pail on his head? I love it.
And Val Kilmer, same thing. Mm-hmm. He essentially ruined the movie with his ego.
Yeah.
But boy, did he bring it. Like, that it, he is... Whatever energy he brought there was top tier. Like, if you take out, basically from, if you do it from the moment that you see Verusa Balk, dancing to Val Kilmer getting shot, whatever long that is, I really like that movie.
Yeah.
But there's a lot before it and a lot after it.
Yeah. There's some bits during that are pretty awkward too, but I was enjoying it for a bit, but when it just sort of dissolved into action at the end, it was much less interesting. And it does make you curious about, because they seem very much in a different movie than the movie that was made. And I kind of wonder how that would have played out in Richard Stanley's version of it, the original director, versus John Frankenheimer coming in to try to save this thing.
So, yeah, John Frankenheimer took over this film from Richard Stanley, who was this indie kind of horror guy. Mm-hmm. Really interesting fellow. He believed that the movie got cursed, and not in like a funny way. Like, he literally is an occult practitioner and like had like shamans try to get this job. He's very 90s kind of Alan Moore, Grant Morrison kind of vibe to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, the movie just went off the rails by hiring Brando and Val Kilmer, and some other things went wrong too. And it just went completely batshit. So much to the point they made a documentary out of it called, Lost Souls?
Lost Soul.
The making of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. And that is a terrific documentary, which John and I both watched. We're probably going to bring up over the course of this episode.
This is sort of a double feature. We're going to be bringing it up a lot, but it's absolutely worth checking out. And if you're going to watch Island of Dr. Moreau, you need to watch this. Even if you're not going to watch it, you should watch Lost Soul.
We probably won't get to it in order. So I'll just give one of the anecdotes they tell is that Marlon Brando, when wanting to rewrite the script from the ground up, he wanted to stop production yet again and rewrite the script. One of his endings is that at the end of the movie, he would take off his big hat and it's revealed that he's actually a dolphin.
Yes, that's why he keeps complaining about the heat and needs an ice bucket on his head. Beautiful. And there's a passing reference to his absolute disdain for what he does as an actor. Yeah. That Marlon Brando just like hates acting, hates the whole thing, but still does it and is good at it. And I'm fascinated by that. I don't think he should, you know, making movies is dumb. He made it so much worse. Same thing with Val Kilmer. But I, at the same time, like, I love the weird energy he brings to it. But he made some bizarre decisions on set that just made everyone miserable.
Yeah, in his later career, it's kind of famous that he hated everything and everyone around him and just wanted to be weird.
Before we get too much into the movie, I don't know, sorry to interrupt, but like you mentioned that Richard Stanley, as an occult practitioner, in the movie Lost Soul, he mentions that he, in order to get this deal made, they're already trying to take it away from him at the beginning because this was going to be a big, big budget thing. They weren't so sure about him as a director. And so he had a friend who was a warlock named Skip do some quote unquote fixing with some magic.
Yeah, Skip the warlock.
You are a person interested in the occult arts. Would you trust a warlock named Skip?
I wouldn't trust a warlock not named Skip.
Okay.
I mean, it is, when I think of occultism, I think of like a nickname for a kangaroo.
Okay. Because see, like for me, it's like if it's the choice between like Skip and like Granthor of the Five Verses or something, I don't know. When I hear Skip, I don't think there's a guy that can get the occult like managed, that can harness the dark arts.
Well, I think what you're not realizing is that Granthor's rate is fucking big. You can get Skip for like $150. Granthor is, you're talking Brando money.
So we're okay. So he's like, Skip's like the Super 8 hotel. Like,
yeah.
You kind of know what you're going to get. It's fine. You know,
yeah. But keep a river head. Probably won't get killed. Like that's what you're getting from Skip. Yeah. The fact that he became like, got his warlock friend to do it. And he called him his warlock. It's
so weird. And then just like the little anecdotes that happened later about what went wrong with Skip is just like, oh yeah, because he's a brilliant biochemist and he may have irradiated himself.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Richard Stanley, by the way, before we get too far into this, giant piece of shit.
Is that true?
Turtle abuser. Yeah, he did Color Out of Space, and then these allegations came out from his partner that were like, yeah, this guy's been beating the shit out of me and gaslighting terrible. He used to be in Portland regularly for the Cthulhu Film Festival, H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. They would do at the Hollywood Theater, and I've seen him there a few times.
Oh shit.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's persona non grata there, because after Color Out of Space came out and that allegation came out, I think it was Spectrovision, the company that put it out, was like, hey, any money we make on this is not going to Richard Stanley, is going directly into charity. Because we don't want to give him time one. So, yeah. So I just want to get that out there, because we're going to be talking about him, because this dude did get screwed over in this. Like, as much as I just said he's a piece of shit, he's only deserved the nonsense that happened to him in this movie.
That's upsetting to hear on two levels. One, you know, sucks that he's an asshole. But two, I have affection for him and what he went through in the documentary.
Yeah,
I mean, think,
absolutely.
I mean, knowing he's an asshole, you know, I can just kind of switch it to like Billy Mitchell style, where he's obviously a dick, but like, you know, you kind of love him a little bit.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like I said, in this, and they do make some passing references to him being in Lost Souls about him being weird. There's one like producery guy who kind of talks about like the first day of shooting, they were just shooting some B-roll. It was going to show up on monitors. He was like, I don't know if this guy's going to handle it. And certainly, I have known people that have been like made little independent movies, music videos, whatever, that when they've gotten called up to a commercial shoot kind of thing, just aren't a good fit. And that can happen for a lot of different reasons, not necessarily experience, but like there's sort of a chain of command or the way things work on a bigger budget thing versus like in an indie thing, everyone's sort of doing everything. And just the vibe is way different, and that can be tough for some people. But the head of New Line Pictures at the time was also like, this guy took 4 sugars in his coffee. Something's weird with him.
That was
like, that's not a big deal. No one cares.
In a weird documentary, that might be the weirdest thing that gets said.
Yeah.
Is this guy freaking out over how many sugars he takes.
Well, particularly coming off of, we were just talking about Top Gun and Don Simpson being like, yeah, I'm pointing guns at writers and like doing all kinds of cocaine. And now it's like, this guy takes 4 sugars.
Yeah. Have you seen his other movies?
I've seen Hardware, which I enjoy. It's a fun little movie. I'm sure it's dated as hell now.
And that's the one that came before Island of Dr. Moreau.
Well, there was that one. There was Hardware, and then that got him some attention, and then he made Dust Devil, which I still have never seen. It used to be on Cinemax all the time, but I still have never watched it. But it's an occult kind of horror-y sort of thing. But I definitely recommend Hardware. That's a fun genre movie.
Yeah, just try to find it for free so you don't give an abusive... Right. Warlock money.
Yeah.
I guess maybe he's not a warlock. He could be.
Yeah, he's just, he's a magical mooch, I guess. He just mooches off of magic.
Yeah. Which is the best way to, man, I need to find a warlock. Anybody out there know that was a good warlock that cast some spells for me? I'm interested.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd take some warlocking.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to be named Skip. You could be named, you know, Hoppy.
Now, does it have to be a warlock? Could it be witchcraft? Or does it have to be warlock?
Oh, anything sorcery. The whole thing's fine. Master the mystic arts. Yeah, yeah.
A paladin, would they do anything for you? Heal that broken heart?
I don't know Dungeons & Dragons well enough to answer that.
They're more white magic, faith-based healers frequently.
Hey, you know what the wrongest world, John, is how much white magic there is. So, no,
that's
I don't
true.
Want that.
That's true.
Yeah. Cishet white magic users are fucking the whole occult scene up. So... Let's talk about The Island of Dr. Moreau, the movie we watched. David Thewlis, who... So in the documentary, they talk about the various people that were supposed to play this role. I don't even remember the list off the top of my head, but I got to tell you, any given actor would have been better than David Thewlis in this. He is remarkably wrong for this.
Yes, and I like David Thewlis, generally.
Yeah.
But I think it started with Bruce Willis as that character. I don't remember if he was supposed to be initially him or Montgomery. There was just all kinds of casting changes. Then it was going to be Val Kilmer as that character, but then Val Kilmer, fresh off a divorce or going through a divorce with his wife at the time, Joanne Wally Kilmer, was like, I want less shooting days. So they turned him over to Montgomery, a smaller role. It was Rob Morrow from Northern Exposure.
Yeah, that's right.
And then after like 2 days of filming, Rob Morrow went, I'm out. And then it became David Thewlis. And yeah, it's either David Thewlis is wrongly cast, or a stronger belief I have is this movie should not have taken place in the present. This movie should have taken place like when it was written. It just seems like the themes and the people's reactions to stuff seems much more aligned with like an 19th century or early 20th century point of view.
So I saw a reference that this movie takes place in the future.
Okay. I thought it was like 19. I know that Moreau was supposed to have won a Nobel Prize in like 1989 or something.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't research it. Just somebody mentioned somewhere that this is supposed to be in the future. It could just be somebody being wrong. I don't know. Could
very well be.
I didn't look into it.
It's supposed to be like modern times. That's it. There's not really like a date attached to it.
I don't disagree with you in the way that the movie came out, but I am fascinated on what Richard Stanley's vision was, because it wasn't this. And I wonder if that would have worked. But just David Thewlis, I don't know what he was trying to do. Like it feels like he was trying to have swagger at times, and he is not a swag kind of person.
No.
It feels like he was trying to do Jeff Goldblum energy. You don't got Jeff Goldblum energy, dude. And I mean, 90s Jeff Goldblum, like when he was all sexy, not Marvel Jeff Goldblum.
There is one part, actually towards the end, when he gives his big sort of final statement to Hyena, that takes him like a minute to say a sentence.
Mm.
And it's maddening. Yeah, I don't know what he was going for there. I feel like there's a lot of people on this movie that were just like, fuck it. I hate this. Like, whatever.
So Thewlis is like that in Harry Potter, too. There's this one really awkward scene where he's talking to Harry on like a lookout point at Hogwarts. And so Harry realizes, like, you knew my mother. And he has this big pause and then wistfully looks out like over the Hogwarts and goes, oh, yes. Oh, I knew her.
Yeah.
It's just really weird. Like, I don't even know what the fuck you were going for. Like, you could definitely read some shit in there that was not. Yeah. Really awkward. I don't really like those movies that much, but that part sticks with me.
Yeah, I can see
why. Acting wise, I totally get it, because by the time they filmed, especially any of the monsters, by the time they filmed any of them, they knew the movie was fucked. So, you know, you can see Fairuza Balk, you could see her like trying to put a performance
in. That's Ron Perlman, yeah.
The German guy that's featured heavily in the documentary, I don't know his actual character name.
Oh, my God. So he is Marco Hofschneider, and he's like mulling or something like that. But he is the standout star of that documentary, and I want to hang out with that guy so bad.
Yeah, he seems chill as fuck. I got a big crush on him.
He's hilarious. Great stories. He's like the original version of the dude that's in like Marvel Civil War, that plays like Baron Zemo or whatever that guy is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was in Inglourious Bastards as like the sniper guy that killed all those people.
Marco
Hofschneider's the original that guy. He was in a different World War II movie, Europa, playing a Jew, like hiding in Nazi Germany, whatever. Really good actor, and he's very, very funny in that documentary.
Yeah, and then beyond that, we're starting to, like, really, that's when the diminishing returns start kicking in. Because, like, Temuera Morrison, and it's not like he's the strongest actor in the world, but, like, I think maybe he was just kind of fucking around. Like, it didn't seem like he cared at all.
Well, you also heard the stories of, like, of people being, you know, sitting 3 or 4 hours in this creature makeup, which Stan Winston stuff, and I still think looks really good.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, they would sit through all that and then not know if they were going to be needed, basically. Like, you'd go through that and be like, well, am I in the scene or not? I don't know, but stay made up just in case.
Yeah. Also, and this is not me being like, boobs, but it's crazy that, like, they had these characters that they, women on set that are dressed as mutants, and they give them, like, 6 tits, you know, like, animal style, but they kept their original tits hanging out on top.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know why that feels, you know, I don't have boobs. Well, I mean, I do, but I mean, I don't have boobs that are sexualized. So maybe I just don't get it, but that feels like, I don't know. There's something struck me as.
Yeah. I'm sure as like, as an actor, you're like, well, it's just part of my body is just part of my tool set and whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't be comfortable doing that if I had to have like two dongs or something like that. Just hanging brains all day.
Especially like you're all dressed up to look fucking hideous. And then it's like, oh yeah, but also get them titties out. So one of the things I did like in the early part of the movie, I think Val Kilmer is great. And he's can't stress enough how he's sexy. He is like he's just very snacky. Mm-hmm. I like his sarcastic stuff that you don't understand until, like, if you didn't know the movie at all, he gives some stuff away. So, like, early in the movie, David Thewlis is like, oh, were you talking about the natives? And Val Kilmer slips into his Brando voice and goes like, yes, the natives, like, real quick. Then you'd never know what that is until having watched the movie, but you're like, oh, they've set this up early that he's fucking off his gourd already.
Yeah, like, I thought he was just making fun of David Thewlis' accent. And this, like, yeah, those guys. But then when kind of what follows.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Oh, I forgot this is your first time watching the movie. Did you watch the documentary movie first?
I watched the documentary a couple years ago.
Oh, okay.
And then I just never got around to watching the movie. And then when we decided to do it, this is my first viewing of it.
So that, and then kind of shortly thereafter when he, David Thewlis sees Fariza Balk for the first time dancing and, boy, every part of my teenage crush on Fariza Balk came back very quickly, starting with that dance. And then, like, you know, who could make this better? Let's give her vampire fangs.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, is that Fariza Balk dancing to Deep Forest is this combination of 16-year-old me's interests.
Yes.
Yeah, because I recognized the song immediately. I was like, oh, my God, that's Deep Forest.
Nice.
And
I had that later in the movie where I'm like, is that Einster Zen Neubautum? So yeah, during that, right after they're in that scene, Val Kilmer is like, oh yeah, she's beautiful. She's just a kitty cat, which you're never going to know that shit unless you've already seen the movie or, you know anything about it.
So basically, to set up where we are, essentially, is that David Thewlis' character, Edward Douglas, you get this narration in the beginning that he survives a plane crash on the Java Sea and then gets picked up by Val Kilmer, or by this ship, by this passing ship, because he's the only one left alive on a raft after his two other survivors, like, killed each other over food or something. I don't know. It happens very abruptly, and then it's kind of forgotten about. I think it's supposed to set up about...
I think that's what they're supposed to be doing, but that, yeah, you didn't do enough there. All that felt like was, we needed two more minutes of the film.
Exactly. And then, so he gets picked up by the ship, and then, like, Val Kilmer takes care of him. They're gonna drop Val Kilmer off at this island, and then Val Kilmer's like, well, you have to come with me, because the people on the ship, they want you to leave.
Well, no, he basically says the captain wants to fuck you. Which is just such a weird beat.
Yeah. But that's how he ends up on this island. Val Kilmer kind of shows him around a little bit, but he takes him to the main house on the island where his boss, Dr. Merrill, lives, and then, like, locks him in a room.
You know, I'll bitch about David Thewlis some more here, is acting choices. What he chooses to react to, he finds a fucking Nobel Prize, and it's as if he found a Snickers.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, huh, Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be... those are important.
Yeah.
Like, I would freak out if I got a hold of the Nobel Prize, not... nod a bit.
Which I like also, because when you get a little bit of the backstory of Dr. Morell before you find out what's been going on the island, in the initial one, he got chased out of polite society from vivisectionists, like surgeons and stuff like that. Where in this one, it's animal rights activists, which I like that updating of, like, I don't know, it's actually people that care about the environment and nature that are getting rid of him, not someone that's like, no, I do surgeries and you do surgeries weird.
Yeah. That brings up the point here. The people that we see in the movie, like Tamara Morrison and Fariza Balk and the Sayer of the Law, they are animals that were turned into humans. Or like animals that gave birth to a human-animal hybrid. Like, that's not a human that got experimented on to turn into an animal.
That's what I'm not entirely clear on, because they do make it sound like he's genetically splicing stuff that... It seems like Fariza Balk is like a generation two or something like that, because she's still mostly human and like transforming into an animal. Whereas everyone else seems like an animal that's become more human. And for like the purposes of like the themes of the book, it makes sense to be like, well, they're animals that we've made more human.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, you know, this is progeny down the line. This seems like the first go round.
Yeah, it's unclear. Because there is a great scene early on where David Thewlis is walking around and he walks into one of the creatures giving birth. And there's some really good creature effects going on there and great animal screaming noise.
Well, apparently it was supposed to be dead. And they were like supposed to be like delivering a baby from a dead animal or something like that. But then they're like, no, we got to make it look alive. And so like the effects team just like threw a bunch of bladders and rods in there and like made it. But it's cool. It's a neat effect.
Yeah. I'm not going to just keep dunking on him, but like the only bad thing is David Thewlis is not reacting at all, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just because he's English and they don't have emotions.
Maybe. I don't know, but it's odd. Like, it's just he's very ill cast for whatever this is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's just I don't believe him doing any sort of action, which is why the end of Wonder Woman was so silly, that it's like David Thewlis. The whole thing is like, well, David, you don't suspect David Thewlis because he's David Thewlis. And it's like, no, actually, I'm a tough guy. No, you're not. You're David Thewlis.
Yeah. That's awkward. I guess the answer is he's a fucking nut job. But why did Val Kilmer kill that bunny at the beginning?
I think he wanted food. I don't know. I can't tell Montgomery's motivations if there was this, like, I'm trying to undermine Dr. Moreau. Because I resent living here. He's just a whack job. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because later when they're having dinner and he gets served the bunny, I thought it was like, no, I just want to eat meat because I'm not supposed to and I want to. I'm acting out.
Yeah. Rebel. David Thewlis and Fiza Balk run away together into the woods. And that's when we really start meeting some of our mutant friends.
That runaway scene is extremely awkward. How it's put together is...
There's also a weird moment of... So this came out in, what, 97-ish?
96.
All right, so maybe... Because there's either weird stop motion or weird CGI in some of these scenes.
It's definitely weird CGI, and some of it's just the... I was willing to just take it up with the... It's like the nature of the technology at the time, that it's a bit dated. Because like when they see that leopard man or...
That's what I was thinking of.
The fully cat guy. When he's like jumping around, it looks very awkward and strange.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it looks about as good as the CG in Wonder Woman 84 for that leopard fight. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but that leopard got titty.
That's true. I did not, you know, the technology wasn't there for titty.
Yeah.
Like, we were still in the early days of titty technology.
Well, that's the best part about living in the future is CGI boobs. I mean, the whole late-stage capitalism, collapse of Western society, CGI boobs. Yeah. Thumbs up.
Let them have CGI boobs. Yeah.
Yeah. So they run into the jungle together and they meet a Sasamon, who is a very awkwardly named little monkey thing. Not a monkey, like a
baboon.
Yeah, like a baboon. Let's say a baboon man. But first of all, to calm Sasamon down, it says, no, he's a five finger man like you. You're five finger men.
Uh huh.
I'm very confused by what was happening right there.
Yeah, that seems like – because this script went through a bunch of rewrites. And in fact, the first few were done by the scriptwriter of Apocalypse Now, which is funny because, as the Lost Soul documentary mentions, that H.G. Wells was like, hey, Joseph Conrad, you just ripped off my shit with Heart of Darkness. And to have Marlon Brando play both Kurtz and Moreau is kind of funny. So anyway, like, that was rewritten. And then when Frankenheimer came on, they rewrote it. So I don't know where – I imagine some stuff got kind of like lost in the mix.
Yes.
Because, yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
There's a lot of the script that, like, I mean, it makes sense. I think it's remarkable how coherent this movie is given its history.
Yes. Yeah. It's honestly, like, the worst thing about it is it's boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Highlander 2 where it's like just nothing. You just cut out a bunch of stuff. It's more just like, okay, well, we're just shooting things. Okay, this is boring now.
Yeah, I mean, once I like the world building, once everything's established, it's fun. And then, it just turns into shooting.
Yeah.
They're hiding out in this kind of the animal city that's in the woods. The heart of the movie arrives. Brando rolls up on like a palanquin kind of Jeep.
Pope-mobile sort of thing.
Covered in white face paint and dressed like someone's elderly grandma that moved to Florida like 30 years ago and like kind of not all there yet.
It's great. Like just moo moo.
He's doing something with his voice. It's strange and it's great. I mean, it's so watchable. I would love more scenes with him.
Yeah. And because it's in the past, this is, I think, like the fifth version of this book made into a movie, the fifth adaptation. And very frequently in the case of Island of Lost Souls, which is the initial one. And then in the Island of Dr. Moreau with Burt Lancaster, Moreau is very much like a mustache twirling mad scientist. And in this one, since thematically he's supposed to be like God, I do like his weird aloofness.
Yeah.
And like, it's not just like, I'm toying in God's domain and I love it. He's more just like, hey, I'm making stuff and whatever. And don't question me. I don't exist on the same plane as you. I'm just going to complain about the heat. This means nothing to me, really.
Yeah, there's no real malice in what he's doing. He's just kind of not there. Yeah.
The closest thing is later when they like come to his house and he tries to like zap them with the whatever, the internal things they have. But even then, that doesn't seem like mean. It more is just like, I'm restoring order.
Yeah.
It's a very casual cruelty, I guess.
This is one of the things that Thulis performed well, is him freaking out at all the creatures. He's like, look at these people, look at him, and he points to like the little 17-inch guy, and the look at him is done in this exasperated freaking out that I do quite enjoy.
Yeah, but that's the sort of thing that makes me think this would make better sense put in a 1900s, early 1900s, 1800s perspective of like, look at that small man. Isn't it weird how they're human beings, but they're small? It doesn't seem, and I realize I'm looking at this back from 2022, but I think even by 1996, I mean, people were still like, ah, ha, 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 midgets, but I don't know. That just seemed like such a, I realized this man is tiny.
But also he's.
But it seemed like his reaction was a little bit outside.
He has the skin of a Slim Jim. We have to add that too.
I suppose that's true. Yeah.
Like he looks.
I'm discounting that, because it seems like the selling point is more that he's tiny, not he's got like gross skin.
He looks like that sketch on Mr. Show with the kid that like fell in acid or whatever.
Yeah. He just up to his neck in acid. Yeah.
And this is where what has to be the most batshit thing that's ever been filmed, in all seriousness, the dual piano scene.
The dual piano thing is great. And what I also love is that came out of Nelson De La Rosa is this tiny man. And he's the inspiration for Mini-Me. And all that, like when they did the whole thing on South Park with the tiny guy too. But like, I don't think his role was supposed to be as prominent to Dr. Moreau. But like, Marlon Brando had like one scene with him. And was like, I love this guy. Put him in all scenes with me.
Yeah.
I also just like the idea. I don't know. It's this movie and the documentary is very damning of this star system. There's so much like we need Marlon Brando in this movie. Even when they were talking about casting him. The people at New Line were like, look, we did a movie with him and he was such a pain in the ass. I don't know that we want him. But then they had him. They're like, well, we need to keep him because that's a name that's going to sell this movie. And then we have Val Kilmer, and Val Kilmer's being an asshole, but we need these names. And they were just going nuts and making all these demands and changes rather than being like, okay, I will serve the movie.
Yeah, the German guy that we were talking about before, I think a lot of the stuff that the little dude did, it was what he was, his role was supposed to be.
And he's very diplomatic about it. It's like, I got all my lines taken away by this little tiny man. I was supposed to be the right-hand man.
Yeah.
And then like at one point the guy like punched him in the nuts too, but he's like, you can't do anything to him. He's 17 inches tall.
That guy rules.
Like, how's that going to look? Yeah.
Germans. What have they ever done wrong? Yeah. Speaking of him, Min Ling reads that slouching towards Bethlehem thing, which I don't actually know what that's from, but I've heard it a million times.
It's a stupid poem, isn't it?
Probably.
But it's also like someone doing a reading from a book seems very turn of the century. Like, let's have dinner and listen to a man read something.
It's true. The only reason I'm somewhat butting against that idea is that I can't take science seriously if it was like the 18 whatever. It's like, no, you didn't.
Sure.
You didn't do that. That's just I can't get my head around it. The 90s, at least, it's close enough. Like, yeah, genetics, we sort of know what we're doing. Maybe some shit could happen here. But like 18 something, like, I don't know, let's light them on fire and then electrocute their balls. Is that science?
Yeah, they should have done. They should have modernized that. They should have had them like winning an NBA jam or something. Like,
that'd be cool.
I made a goat into a man, and then that man was able to do a world record breaking speed run of Super Mario World.
Yeah, that's what this movie is really missing, is Twitch integration.
That's true. Yeah. They could have synergized better.
You know, it's interesting. If can't imagine this is going to turn people on to watching the movie, but like, people that are born after us watching this for the first time, trying to parse having seen Mini-Me before seeing this. I mean, I guess you did, but I think you were aware that Mini-Me came from this.
Yeah, I knew the connection. Yeah.
Because that's a weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. Because, yeah, that was like, this dude had a, not the same way that Vern Troyer did, but this dude like had a hot second of like, what's the deal with this tiny man?
Yeah.
And I guess he's huge in his native country, but I mean, was very famous in his native country.
No, his native country is, he's actually from Little Putia, and he is fucking huge there. He's like equivalent to like, you know, like 6'11". Like, I mean, he's playing ball. Yeah.
he's the Manute Bol of.
That was the other funny thing in the documentary. That one lady who like just is just over everything, that blonde lady, where she was just talking about.
Oh, the Australian.
Yeah, where she was just talking about how horny he was.
She was great. Again, I would love to hang out and talk to her, too, about her experience, like, off camera, because I'm sure she had a lot of things to say that was like,
100%.
I can't say this. Because they start talking about how, like, the particularly, like, the crew and the, you know, the extras or whatever, like, it kind of turned into a bacchanal for them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of downtime and they would hang out at each other's apartments or in little hotels and stuff like that.
I mean, it sounds fun, other than the, you know, your titties hanging out and it being swelteringly hot and the set being run so badly. I would fear for my life on that set, I feel like. You know, like the gun safety and the explosions just feel like it's something, somebody's going
to
get hurt.
Yeah, there does seem to be a startling level of incompetence that was riddled through this.
Yes. There is a good speech here, which is the only time I somewhat lamented Brando and what he was doing. Is there's a well-written speech of him, like, he's referring to the devil, and it's like, I saw the devil through my microscope, and I chained him. And that could be cool if not done like that. Like, I think that actually, there's, like, there's some power in that speech, and just, when, you know, when you're doing your lines as if you think later you're going to be revealed to be a dolphin man, you know, some of the gravitas gets taken away.
Which, that's something I will say about the opening of this movie, is, boy, calm down. It's all these like this like very dramatic music over just like microscope footage of nothing happening. And then like and then the text treatment where it gets these weird like points on the letters. It was just like way too much. Like, you saw Seven and went, well, we got to copy that. That's in right now. And I don't know. It didn't really fit the tone of the rest of the movie. And it was just ugly and stupid to begin with.
Yeah, I forgot about that part. You know what I like too? So in the effects department. The little rat, little rat boys that he meets on the when he tries to run away.
That was extremely bizarre, but I got a kick out of it. I was not expecting it because they do this thing where he's he looks in this cage and it's like, oh my god, what could be in a cage? Is it another animal person? And it is, but it's a tiny rat man, and they're all CG, and then they just sort of snarl at him and. All right.
Yeah.
It felt like I was in a Muppet movie all of a sudden.
That's exactly the feeling. Yeah. I mean, they're my friends and we hang out all the time. They're like live in my apartment now. Yeah, there's a lot of this movie doesn't have a driving narrative, let's say. And there's a lot of like David Thewlis kind of loosely trying to escape like a bit. And that's one of them. He's like, I got the boat, but I got too freaked out by the things I could easily kick off the side of the boat. Like, he's not that committed to the leaving, I guess.
Not without Fruza Bulk, apparently. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But yeah, it did just feel like, all right. I wasn't expecting to see this. That bums me out. I'm not in the headspace to leave the island now. That's just not right. I need to take a me day.
Yeah. I was expecting, because he's got like no personality in this, I was expecting there to be like a swerve. That it turns out that he's like genetically engineered and he was born, you know, a week ago.
Yeah. Like when the big reveal happens, how like they've got his blood and stuff like that. I thought that's where that was headed.
Yeah, me too.
That like it turns out he's genetically created too, but no, it's just they're taking his stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought they were going to Palpatine him. So back in the village, they have a trial for Mai Tai or whatever the hell that like jaguar person that like killed a rabbit. And. Mm-hmm. One of the Tamira Morrison puts a bolt gun to the thing's head and destroys it. And Brando freaky is like, what have you done? And the guy goes, I'm sorry, father. I thought you wanted me to protect the law. And it's like the logic of the film breaking down as the structure of the I am breaking down. I'm like, this movie's great. Like, this is fun.
Yeah. Well, because then when he's like, oh, because you're not supposed to. Okay, because part of the whole thing is that the animals are fighting against their animal nature to be more human. These are the laws handed down by the Sayer of the Law, and something that Marlon Brando, Dr. Moreau, firmly believes. Like, no, we have to act human. We have to, you know, depart from our instinct versus, you know, culture or whatever. But then when that guy breaks the law by killing another thing, it's like, ugh, well, whoops, moving on.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like that could have been a thing or made a point about, you know, violence from the state versus the individual. So like, no, it's just like, whoopsie. Well, let's set that aside.
Well, that goes back to I'm wondering what the original script was like. Is I bet you those themes are actually like explored or at least something. It's not just this, the scene that happens that makes the next scene happen. Like, that's it.
Though that would be pretty great because the way Richard Stanley describes his experience with the book in the documentary is like, oh, he loved it. It was very formative. If, like, all he got out of it was, like, people turn into animals and it's cool.
Yeah.
That would be pretty great.
So all of the Mai Tai stuff, Lo Mai, is just a means to have Hyena find Lo Mai's bones and realize that there's a tracker on it. And he puts together, like, oh, that's where the pain comes from. And this is, you know, essentially the end of all things for Dr. Moreau, because now his creatures can fight back against him, much like has happened in every sci-fi story ever. So you probably should have thought about that beforehand.
I couldn't tell what was happening at first when the hyena is like pulling out his tracker thing, because he's just like digging into his he's very sad about his friend dying and being burned up, and then he just starts digging into his flesh and pulls out a chunk.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay. Whatever that is, I'm sure is important.
You know, it's something to discuss there too. Is the whole point of this experiment is make like the most kind of angelic version of a human, you know, the one that's got no malice, no whatever. So why do you need chips to shock the shit out of them? I mean, you've been doing it for 17 years. Come make some fucking progress, dude. Yeah. Like these are like violent as fuck things.
Yeah. Well, why do we still have prisons, man?
Because our country's a shithole. I'm saying this is one man, one rule. I want a dictatorship on this island. A dictatorship of science.
Trump 2022, but with science.
Yeah, don't even joke about that.
I just want it on tape so that when they come for me, I can go like, see, I was always one of the good ones.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Hey, John, yeah, let's make America crumble. Great again.
I believe
again.
In nothing.
I really love I'm leaving a blank there so we can go back and edit in.
Yeah, just America.
Yeah. I just wrote here because this is the second or third time there's just a random voiceover from David Thewlis that you can tell they just didn't get the footage to try to make a full movie out of it. So like, I don't know, just – and he's like, and that's when I noticed that the island was starting to go sideways and things are bad. It's like, really? You couldn't have just shown that?
Yeah, it's the Harrison Ford Blade Runner
narration,
you know, where it's like, ah, fuck, well, we need something to tie this together.
One of the famous scenes of this movie is the incredible ad-libbing and improving that happened between Val Kilmer and Marlon Brando. One of the few scenes they actually share and talk to each other, where Brando says, while looking in the microscope, it's completely turned yellow. And then Val Kilmer responds with, yeah, it's almost opaque. That's it. That's the whole
stuff.
It is, I don't know, like, maybe it's just the hatred they have of each other coming out, or maybe they're just guys that need lines in front of them, but it is famously bad improv science, and it is top-notch stuff.
Real good. Real quality.
Yeah. Around here, we're introduced to the idea that all of the animals have to keep getting inoculations so they don't revert back to their feral state.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes back to the confusing thing of, are they animals, or are they men, or are they Devo?
Yeah, they're Mark Mother's ball.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because it's certainly like that's, you get the sense that that's the only thing that's keeping Firouza Balk human is like her serum, is her taking this serum. But like, why are they giving it, like, why is she the most human out of them? Whereas, are you not giving the serum to the other people too?
I think you're right about she's like the next gen model. Maybe when she has a kid, it'll be like perfect. You know, one of those, that kind of deal.
Yeah, it'll be Mewtwo.
Oh, yeah. I wish. Remember where Ash tried to punch Mewtwo?
I don't.
It was funny.
Bruce Campbell, Ash?
No. No, Ash, catch him! Tried an Ash impression for no good reason. there's David Thewlis is trying to lounge and talk to Val Kilmer. And his lounging pose is pointing a loaded gun at his head.
Yeah. Which, like, I get you do not want to be in this movie, David Thewlis. I don't want to be watching this movie, but it's not that bad.
Yeah, but it's just bad. That's some bad fucking trigger discipline, dude.
Yeah.
I
bet that's got to be in the IMDb trivia. about what kind of gun it is that he has holded to his head and how that's bad trigger discipline.
Fairuza Balk approaches Dr. Moreau because she realizes she's starting to revert. You know, she's getting some vampire fangs coming in, and her ears are starting to get a little pointy. And she cries to him saying that she's hideous. And I would just like to say that my teenage boner disagrees, young miss.
Yeah.
Because, boy, that is peak high school Alex.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's also this movie, again, like the documentary, like I want to hang out with Fairuza Balk and just listen to her talk.
She's
fascinating. And the fact that she was ride or die for Richard Stanley is amazing. And that they basically, like, she wanted to walk off the movie, but like her agents and whoever was like, they will crush you. They will ruin your career. And not talk about like how fucked up that is as a concept. This was a horrible experience. But if you leave, like the powers that be will make sure you never work in the town again and all this stuff. You know, when she legitimately should have left, like this production was just fucked. The fact that she was willing to fight so much for this guy, I think is kind of cool.
Yeah. She comes across very well in the documentary. And also, she seems quite smart. Like, maybe that's why you don't see her much anymore. She just took her money and left.
Yeah. I mean, she definitely like talks about it, how like she has an ethos and that's not welcome in. I mean, she doesn't go so far as to say that, but she just talks about like playing politics and how it's money and all this stuff. And that none of this, how it went down is not how it should have gone down.
Yeah.
But it just seems like she might be a person with some level of integrity, and that seems fascinating. But it's also, I like her voice, and I'd be fascinated by what story she has to tell.
Yeah.
Because just like that bit in the documentary when she's like, there's a story about, you know, Richard Stanley's wild behavior. Like, he climbed a tree and wouldn't get out. And just the way she questions that story is very funny to me.
Yeah, kind of love her. Hope she, I don't know, comes to my house and gives me a hug.
Or permanently, I hope she permanently files down her teeth to vampire fangs.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the best solution here.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to watch The Craft later. Yeah, I don't know. This is about where Dr. Moreau dies.
Yeah, because the after the hyena gets his thing taken out, whatever, he tells other people that they can do that too, and they break into Dr. Moreau's house. And I love his interaction with them.
Yes.
Because he's very much like, oh, hey, what are you guys doing here?
Would you like a biscuit?
Yeah, you're playing a piano very badly. Oh, but that's like this kind of music. What if about this kind of music?
Yeah.
And it's only when he tries to like get his, because it sort of like plays out that he's not just being nice. He's also biding time till he can get to his zapper thing to affect their little beacons or whatever. And then when it doesn't work, they kill the hell out of him.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was going to be gone from the movie. I was very shocked that they killed him. I thought that was good. He was going to be like around till the end.
It would have made a better movie because really kind of this is where it starts driving off a cliff. There's some good Kilmer stuff, but even then that doesn't last that long. Cause there is an awkward scene coming up here where they burn his body. And then David Thewlis essentially tries to fuck Fairuza Balk in front of her burning father.
Yeah.
That is, and this goes back to the acting thing, is I think maybe he didn't understand what he was trying to emote in that scene and went with slightly sensual, and that's not the thing to do. Literally, you can smell your dad right now.
Yeah, I don't know if that was, you know, if that was him, if that was Frankheimer. Frankheimer was as we mentioned, brought onto this role, this job to fix everything. And John Frankheimer has made some amazing movies. Seconds with Rock Hudson, a wonderful film. The original Manchurian Candidate, Ronin. But he is an asshole by all accounts in this movie. Even the guy that was like, he had passed away, I think, by the time that this movie came out, and they were, or at least they were only talking to his first AD, who even in describing him was like, his assistant director was describing him as like, he was very strong and he had a particular way of working kind of thing, but he just liked to yell at people apparently. But it's very unclear what was supposed to be going on in that scene. Like, Why is he all horny for Fairuza Balk in front of a burning body?
It is baffling. And we'll never get the answer because, I got nothing to follow it up with. We're just never going to get the answer.
We're just never going to, yeah.
Do you think Richard Stanley's seen this movie?
That's a good question. Probably not. He's probably watched a documentary about
him. Oh, I'm sure he's seen the documentary, but. Yeah.
Because we skipped over this part, and this is one of the main reasons to watch the documentary. Well, not the main reason, it's just a fascinating story. But like a series of events happens that they need a whole bunch of extras to fill out the animal people, And they go and find some hippie commune. And on the hippie commune, they find, or nearby the hippie commune anyway, they find Richard Stanley. And he sneaks back onto set as a dog person. Yeah. And he's in a couple of scenes as the dog person.
It's so great.
Which is amazing. Like that just, because the thing was, he was paid by the studio. Like, look, you're done. We'll pay you your full rate, but you have to leave the set and you don't say shit. And you have to, like, it was like 40 kilometer restraining order, basically. And so, because if he went back on, he would forfeit his money. But he was also like, I want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
This was like a dream project of mine and I want to know what's happening. And that's beautiful.
It is. It's upsetting that he turns out he's an ass, because
yeah.
That's fun. This is where there's a sequence of Val Kilmer where Val Kilmer just dresses up like Brando now and does a full Brando impression.
Yeah.
And it's glorious. But it's only like, I don't know, what, 5 minutes? And then he dies.
at most. And again, like, I was left going like, well, wait, did he want Moreau usurped? And like, he's kind of making fun of him. Is he just off his gourd because he really loved him and needed him in his life? Is he, and now he's just... escaping into drugs. Because that weird, like, yeah, it becomes this weird animal orgy thing of them just, like, embracing their animalistic self. And he's being lowered in this elevator and talking like Marlon Brando.
Giving them drugs, yeah. And then literally...
Yeah, giving them tons of drugs.
A chimera orgy, yeah.
Yeah, and then he gets killed.
Yeah, which is just, for the film, it's such a bummer because there's still a fair bit of movie left. And now there's... Other than Fiza Balk, who lasts 4 minutes maybe after this, there's no one you want to watch anymore.
Well, did you ever read the original story?
No, I don't think so.
Because I've only read a little bit of it, and I know in Lost Soul, Richard Stanley talks about how most of the adaptations end with Moreau's death, or like the animal rebellion, but then they build a society after that, and then that doesn't go well. And he wanted to not do that, but that seems like that's exactly what this movie does. So yeah. I wasn't sure if he was talking out of his ass and that's kind of just how the plot of the book works, or they just did it again for this movie.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? It was such a mess that, yeah, who knows what like the intention was and how it worked out, or if it's just Frankenheimer just, you know, just shut up. We're doing these scenes. We just need this fucking picture to end.
Yeah. I want to go home.
Yeah. So after the orgy, Val Kilmer starts getting real sad. He tells one of the other Chimera that he wants to go to dog heaven, and then he gets shot dead.
Mm-hmm.
Which, saying it out loud, kind of awesome that happened in a movie.
Well, and his Brando impression is hilarious.
Yes.
It's great. It's very batshit, but yeah. Again, same thing where I was not expecting him to just be kind of summarily dispatched.
Yeah. And it goes back to the Thulis thing of, I guess if I cared more about the main character, the last part of this movie wouldn't drag so bad. But, like, no one I care about's left alive except for Fiza Balk. And she's killed shortly. I mean, there's some bit we talked about, like, his DNA and whatever, and them kind of commiserating over how she can't get any serum anymore. But then she's hung. Hanged.
Yeah, she's very, summarily executed, and it was not expecting that either. But
yeah.
I think part of the problem is because you have, and again, not being familiar with the original book, but you have Thulis as this, like, observer character, when then it's, like, really kind of, this doesn't, like, happen at the end, and he's just witnessed all this and then escapes. It's that he keeps hanging around. And, like, is he supposed to be proactive? He hasn't had a personality up to this point. What am I supposed to care about him now? Like, I don't...
Yeah,
it's... Anyone interesting has been killed.
It's baffling. He basically uses trickery to get the animals to fight each other, thus killing Hyena. Hyena dies in a fire, and the Speaker of the Law gives up his faith. Like, perhaps 4 is better than 2, and the law is bullshit, and everything I believed in. And then there's another inexplicable voiceover that just hits you over the head with the themes of the movie. Just like, are we the animals? Are we?
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Think about it, won't you? It was needless and annoying. Because it's not just the voiceover, but then like you see like documentary footage of like riots and shit like that. Oh, wow. Thank you. I never thought of that.
It's quite heavy-handed. Yeah, I would say watch the documentary. And if you find it interesting, you know, I think I made it clear where the parts of this movie that are terrific are. Maybe just watch those.
And I highly recommend, like, Tubi is, because I watched the documentary on Tubi, and I think, like, years and years ago, you brought up watching something on Tubi, and I was, like, making fun of it. But Tubi is great because, like, it has so many movies on there that, like, you cannot find anywhere else. Now, a lot of those are garbage, but I'm glad that they're bothering to show them.
Yeah.
And if you're watching it on a computer with ad blocker, boom, no problem.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I didn't think of that because I watched it on Amazon, which has ads. And I totally forgot I could have just installed an ad blocker. Because I've got the other, I've got like, you know, normal pop-up blockers and whatever, not the video one. All right. So you're kind of agreeing with me here. Don't watch it, but the documentary.
Yeah, it's not a good movie, but like for as cursed as the production was, it's surprising it's not worse. It's just ultimately very boring.
Yeah.
And interesting. But there's some interesting performances, but it's not a great movie. But the documentary and the story behind it is fascinating.
Yeah. So I guess watch the documentary is the key takeaway. And don't end up finding the director charming because apparently he turns into an asshole.
He sucks.
Any recommendations?
I would recommend the works of James Caan since he died. I recommended Thief on here before. That's good. Rollerball, Godfather, obviously. And then also because James Caan went away, but then I just found out that Joe Parra Talks to You is not being renewed, and that is still one of my favorite shows. I just started rewatching that, and I recommended it on the show before, but I'm doing it again in light of this news.
Godfather is one of the most overrated movies ever made. Moving on.
We should do a show about it because I want to yell at you.
No, it can't happen because of this. You didn't grow up in New Jersey. Okay. You don't know what it's like to be surrounded by people that think that about that movie, that it's just like, I can't like it. And
what I can see is like, I went to college with a guy that really was into Fight Club for entirely the wrong reasons.
This is
like, he had he would be like, self-improvement really is masturbation. Meaning like, it feels good in rules. Yeah. So, okay. Fair. Like, that's fair. That if I was surrounded by nothing but that, you know. All right.
Recommendations wise, the last season of Stranger Things was quite good. I enjoyed that a lot. There's a scene that is one of the more amazingly stupid, I can't believe this is happening in a show, people watch scenes. And I mean that in a good way. That made it really worthwhile. So watch Stranger Things if you're into that. But someone was telling me that Netflix is like weird, like turfy transphobe kind of stuff happening there, which I didn't actually read the story, but I heard from two different people.
Well,
so,
what's going on? They fired a bunch of people, POC and other people work on other shows. And meanwhile, they continue to, they'll do stuff like, oh, it's Pride Month at Netflix. But then like you can scroll right past it to some Dave Chappelle transphobic bullshit.
Oh,
and then
okay.
They're like, they're trying to hire people now. And it's like, what's your trans, you know, if you had a transgender, it's worded very corporately. Like, what is your transgender experience? You know, like, oh, I went to school for it or something like that. It's worded very strange. But then still, they'll be like, yeah, but we're going to make a ton of money off of Dave Chappelle or pay him a bunch of money to do this stuff. So.
Yeah. So basically what I'm saying is, you know, steal your boomer, you know, aunt's Netflix account, you know, don't give them money if they don't need to. But, you know, I enjoyed it. I don't enjoy a lot of things. I was like, hey, look at that.
You know, it got people to listen to Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush. So I figure it can't be all bad.
It's true. Which is a very good scene, too, where that is featured. So
that is a personal, like, favorite song of mine. And then, like, I'm seeing it everywhere. I'm like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, I think I remembered that song more fondly before Stranger Things than now that it's like I've actually listened to it again. I was like, yeah, it's fine. But like my memory of it 2 years ago, my memory of it is like, oh, I love that song.
I very much like the idea of people getting way into Kate, like being like, oh, this song rules, I'll check out some of Kate Bush's other stuff. And just whatever that Pandora's box is.
Is she weird? I don't remember Kate Bush that well.
She's very weird. Yeah. I like her, but she's extremely weird.
I know I listened to her a bit in high school, but I don't really remember it.
There's some song or album like ends with her doing donkey noises. It's, yeah.
Well, you know, got to jerk off to something.
All right.
What do we think?
That is the law.
Yes. What are we thinking for next time?
So for next week, I think we should check out Edgar Wright's latest Last Night in Soho. I've not seen it. I have a very strong belief that Edgar Wright doesn't make good things outside of his partnership with Simon Pegg, And I'm curious if this proved me wrong.
I have not seen any of his stuff outside of his work with Simon Pegg, but I have no reason to disagree.
I should qualify that by saying I did enjoy the Sparks documentary. But I think as far as narrative stuff goes, I haven't liked any of his non-Simon Pegg stuff.
Yeah. All right. So let's watch that. What was it called? Last Night in Soho?
Last Night in Soho.
Excellent.
It's got that Almond Taylor-Joy is in it. Thomasin McKenzie, who is the Jewish girl that dances with the Nazi kid in Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, yeah. So make sure to rate, review, share the show with friends. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/AlexBolin, Alex with two X's, the link's on the website. And we're at JawsPod on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Check us out.
Yes. We will see you next time.
Bye. Goodbye.